it's an interesting thing to realize that you've tried and experimented with all the quote unquote accepted therapies and they've been damaging. And the one that's been most effective and supportive has been the most demonized.
This is the Cannabis Enigma, cutting through the smoke to have informed, serious conversations for regular people. Hi, I'm Michael Schaefer Omerman.
And I'm Alana Goldberg. Got any nugs of wisdom for us today, Mike?
I do. It's something that's come up a few times over the past few weeks when I've been discussing cannabis, cannabis treatment, cannabis research with people, everyone from my mother-in-law to our interviewee today and pharmacists and doctors. I talk about weed a lot, if you didn't get that. And the thing that's been coming up again and again is how a little can go a long way with cannabis and how we don't often realize that until you try, because even smoking a whole joint or sharing a joint with one or two people can be way, way more than the average person needs to get their ideal effect. Alana, you were infatuated with this idea of a biphasic response curve,
right,
a while ago. And it's really just a fascinating thing that, you know, a small amount of cannabis, just a couple, a few milligrams, can have just as much, even a more effective treatment or therapy than a lot. And we've seen this come out in research lately. And obviously, everybody's different and you can read a lot more about that on our site. But anyway, it's something that has done wonders for my own cannabis use over the years once I realized this. And the more I learn about it, the more fascinating it is to me.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I'm happy you brought this up. I think also something that kind of works against many cannabis consumers being able to find this sweet spot is the cannabis culture that we've grown up on. And I never grew up with this idea of like, oh yeah, just take one hit and then wait half an hour and see what happens, in the same way as I was told, just have one glass of wine and don't go on and have another glass of wine right after that. So I think, and I hope, that, you know, as we see regulations easing, legalization across the board, there's going to be more of this kind of positive education to newer cannabis users.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that actually is going to come down to what kind of products are out there. If you, like our guest today, find that 2.5 milligrams of THC is what's right for you, like, it's actually a little bit hard to take that little sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. If you're, you know, you're only able to purchase 30% THC products, for example. So you keep teasing.
Yes. So I spoke with Max Simon. Max Simon is the CEO of Green Flower, which is a cannabis education empire, let's call it. No, but seriously, they're doing a lot of great work in a lot of places. And we talked about that. They recently launched a partnership with Syracuse University, offering a certificate program there. And they have programs with 9 other universities and colleges and tons of online courses. And we talked about it. I also grilled him on it a little bit. You know, there's a lot of skepticism toward the for-profit education industry. You can judge his answers for yourself. But the thing that we start off with and the part that was most interesting to me was he is a medical cannabis patient and one who openly talks about it for a condition that we don't hear that much about, which is ADD. It's a very common condition and not something you hear a lot about cannabis.
Well, I'm very excited to hear the interview. We've been wanting to get Max on the podcast for a while, and especially because, and I think this is something you just alluded to, because he is so vocal about his personal cannabis use and experience with cannabis. So I'm really interested to hear more about his story.
So let's get to it. And just a reminder that the Cannabis Enigma podcast is a co-production of Americans for Safe Access and The Conigma. Max Simon, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with you. I've heard you say in other interviews that you first experienced cannabis as a teenager at the age of 14 or 15. Is that correct?
Yep.
And you, what I read is that you said that while you didn't understand it at the time, that you, in retrospect, believe that you were self-medicating your ADD. At what point did you begin to understand or start to think that cannabis was helping your ADD?
Not until I started Green Flower did it really become clear to me that I've been self-medicating this whole time, actually. I've been a closet cannabis consumer since my teen years and have struggled immensely with ADD my entire life. And I was really never using it consistently enough and methodically enough and well-dosed enough to say it was my medicine. And yet at the same time, simultaneously, I was using it consistently enough to know that it was something I was extremely drawn to and always felt like it was beneficial to me. And it really wasn't until I started Green Flower and was doing so much research into the science and the medical efficacy and the research and everything that was happening to understand that this was not just a medicine for the world, but had been my medicine all along. And so I became a more methodical user, a more well-dosed user, and have really continued to feel like, as a result of the knowledge I've gained, it's become my medicine.
We had a neurologist and cannabis researcher on the program last year who did one of the few studies on cannabis and ADD in Germany. Kirsten Müller von, I believe is her name. And she said something that has stuck with me ever since, which is that every psychiatrist in the world knows that there's a comorbidity between ADD and cannabis use disorders, but that she decided to take a different approach to that equation and say, well, maybe people who have ADD have just found that cannabis helps them. Were you receiving a treatment of any kind for your ADD at the time or before you came to this realization? And if so, what did your physician or psychiatrist think of your cannabis use, if you even told them?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through every traditional ADD treatment that exists. I've gone down to the Amens Clinic and did 3 days of brain scans, and I continue still to this day to be a meditator and a yoga practitioner and a spiritual practitioner. And so I've tried everything. And furthermore, as I've ever brought up cannabis in any of the circles, doesn't matter whether it was my spiritual circles or my medical circles or my ADD circles, everybody basically told me that this was detrimental and something I should stay away from. And so I have gone through the route of trying all the traditional therapeutic routes of administration for ADD, which never not only didn't help, but didn't feel good either. And I have also been warned against cannabis by all the same people. And so it's an interesting thing to realize that you've tried and experimented with all the quote unquote accepted therapies and they've been damaging. And the one that's been most effective and supportive has been the most demonized. And so I find that's why there's such an interesting opportunity with cannabis, because in so many ways, it's not just that it's so effective, it's also that you have to overcome a tremendous amount of stigma and misinformation that's still carried alongside it.
What exactly does it do for you, if you can describe?
Yeah. The way I describe my ADD is that from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to bed, which is, you know, usually after a full day, 11 o'clock at night, it kind of feels like I've got 5 shots of espresso in my veins. And it never goes away. It's unrelenting is a way to say it. And so sitting still is really, really difficult. Doing anything that requires patience is very, very difficult. If you've ever had too much caffeine, you feel very jumpy all the time. And it makes focusing on certain things really, really difficult. The flip side of that is that it makes focusing on things that you care about like all encompassing. And so it gives me the ability to just, you know, I get so super, super focused, which can be good in some senses, but then can be really challenging socially or can be really challenging from a family standpoint. And so for me, cannabis does a number of layers of things. It allows me to settle down. That's one thing is it just kind of settles my system down to what I would imagine is more what normal people feel like on a day-to-day basis. it allows me to kind of open up my consciousness in a way that makes it a lot more friendly and a lot more compassionate and a lot more connected. I would say a kind of almost a more human level of relationship. And it helps me sleep, which is a big thing for an ADD brain because it's very easy to just be wired all the time. And so it has this kind of trifecta of slowing the system down, socially making me more connected, helping me sleep a little deeper and feel better as a result of all those things, you know, be able to engage in relationships in a healthier way and be able to engage in life in a healthier way.
And what's your regimen today? What kind of products, what kind of delivery methods, dosing?
Yeah, I'm on a very low dose THC tincture. And so I take about 2.5 milligrams of THC. Right now is like my current regimen is 2.5 milligrams of THC twice a day. And that's it. On occasion, I'll smoke a joint or something because I love that experience. But I'm very therapeutic and very low dose and just THC. That's the other thing that's been fascinating is I think because of my brain chemistry, CBD doesn't work for me at all. And I tend to get quite agitated with CBD in my systems, whether it's with THC or not. And so I have a very strange response to CBD that doesn't seem to be very common. But yeah, CBD agitates me. So I just do very, very low dose THC tincture products twice a day.
Wow. And how long did it take you to get to that regimen that works for you? How much experimenting and trial and error did you have to do?
Great question. A lot. I've been experimenting with all the delivery methods. I've gone through a smoking phase and I've gone through a vaporization phase and I've gone through an edibles phase and I've gone through a topical phase and a tincture phase and a sublingual phase and concentrates phase. I've kind of tried everything. That's been something I've been really intent on doing, both personally and professionally. I wanted to understand all these different modalities. And took me, I would say, a good year or so of experimentation to realize an oil-based whole plant THC tincture at very low dose was the right strategy for me from a medicinal standpoint. You know, there's plenty of other things I love doing just socially or recreationally or for fun that I would just say is more fun and more enjoyable. But from a medicinal standpoint, which is the primary way I use cannabis, that low-dose THC tincture took me about a year of trial and error to just get to a place of recognizing this was the best method for me.
Well, I'm glad you found that. It's one of the things that I hear a lot from people when I ask, what do you think people are doing wrong with cannabis? And almost always from a treatment perspective, it's using too high of a dose. So powerful at low doses. And even with a biphasic response, that it's really interesting to hear that you're using such a low dose.
Yeah, I think it's a funny paradox. And I think this is also where the medical adult use kind of paradigm is difficult because there's not a lot of medicines that people like love, right? It's not like I love my medicine, but in cannabis, people, myself included, you love it. You know, you love cannabis, you love the influence of cannabis. And I think there's tremendous benefits personally, spiritually, professionally in the psychoactive components of cannabis. And yet, at the same exact time, there is a challenge that can happen when you lean too heavily on cannabis and you become kind of too connected to that psychoactivity at all times. And so it's this real process of self-modulation and kind of self-awareness to make sure you're being very intentional with how you're using it. And I've done better at that at times and I've done worse at that at times. And I do feel like my current strategy of very, very low dose THC tincture is the most sustainable way while also recognizing that I'll be the first to tell you, like, I love to smoke a joint with my wife or enjoy some delicious hash or something like that as something to just really enjoy and appreciate, but not necessarily something that I should be doing, you know, multiple times a day as a medicine.
You mentioned all the different delivery methods and doses that you went through in order to find this. How long have you been on this? And do you feel confident that it'll be sort of a long-term regimen for you?
I've been on this primary strategy for a few years now. I think so. Yeah, I think so. I can say that cannabis does have different levels of influence based upon your tolerance, as well as your environment, as well as your life circumstances. And I have found that I actually am using cannabis less and less as I get older, only because I kind of have developed a better and better relationship with my ADHD. Whereas I would say before I was just kind of taken over by it. And now I'm in a place where I can see the kind of the buzziness happening at all times, and I can be aware of the impulses to move as quickly as I do, but also not necessarily be controlled by that. And so I say that because I've leaned less and less and less on cannabis as I've gotten older to manage the thing I'm using it for primarily, but still use it with consistency, obviously. So I would love to get to a place where I'm not having to use anything, because I think that's the ideal. Your body is in a state of homeostasis without any supplements. But I'm definitely not there yet. You know, I'm not there yet. So until I'm there, I'm going to keep very gratefully using this plant that I find is an amazing experience.
Let's jump over to green flower. You've, I believe, worked in the wellness space for quite some time, even before green flower. How did you make the decision to jump over to cannabis, and why cannabis education?
Yeah, so before cannabis, I've done a number of different things, but the thing that was most relatable to this was when I was with Deepak Chopra, where I was with him in the Chopra Center in particular very early on in the early 2000s, right as that organization in particular was kind of hitting its stride with bringing meditation and yoga and mind-body medicine out into the world in a really big way. And through the work that we did, I was there for about 8 years, we reached hundreds of millions of people. We built a really successful, thriving business. We made a profound impact in the world. And it was amazingly satisfying and fulfilling. And I stand back today looking at how accepted meditation and yoga and mind-body medicine is in the world. It's so common now. But back then, you know, nobody knows this, but it was not only not common, it was utterly rejected in most places. It was so tremendously stigmatized. It was so seen as something for just, you know, hippies out in the woods who are sitting barefooted meditating in full lotus. It was like all of these stereotypes existed there. And I watched what happened through good education and good training and good leadership and good platform and good technology and good marketing and good products could not just shift humanity, but also could build really exciting businesses around. And so when I was looking for a kind of a new thing to do, the business I was in was quite frankly just too easy for me at that point. And I was just kind of bored. I mean, I was bored at what I was doing. And so I was really opened up to looking for what was next for me that would really challenge me. It was probably not the right motivation because cannabis has really challenged me. But I got a kind of a consulting gig with one of the first vape pen companies in California in 2014. And it was a consulting gig. That's all it was. But it was through that vehicle that I started looking really deeply at cannabis, and just the analog between what I had done already with Chopra and what this was so palpable to me. It was so real to me. But the difference was that because I've had this long-standing relationship with cannabis, it was even more personal to me. And so it was a very easy decision, actually. It didn't take me long after getting this consulting job to research cannabis, look at the state of where things were, look at what I believed was going to be the development of this industry, and decide that I wanted to play a really major role as an educator, as somebody that would be able to kind of bring credibility and trust into the space. And so, yeah, I jumped in with kind of both feet very quickly and had a lot of pushback in some of my circles, for sure. There was lots of people that were very confused by my move, but I just felt, based upon my background and my experience, that this was just the perfect place for me to go next in my career.
Maybe you can just give a very short description of what Green Flower is. We'll put a link in the show notes to anybody who wants to read more and check it out, but just an overview to give context to the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, Greenflower's gone through a lot of iterations in the last 6+ years. But where we have landed is really a leader in professional education and training in the cannabis space. And so we have kind of 4 different lines of business that we use to further this mission of educating the world about how to succeed in cannabis. We have our Greenflower certificate programs, which exist online at our website, green-flower.com. And we have those in a number of different areas, from medical to fundamentals to cultivation, and are about to actually launch a whole new series of industry adopted trade certifications in cultivation, manufacturing, and retail. And so we have that line of business, which basically helps individual people gain credentials and training in the cannabis space. We have a line of business that partners with colleges and universities and powers the curriculums that they offer through the university. And so we just recently signed our 10th university partnership with Syracuse University out in New York, but we've got 9 other schools around the country, from UC Riverside to St. Joseph's University to Northern Michigan University and Northwest Missouri State University. And those programs are in cannabis medicine, in the business of cannabis, in cannabis agriculture, and cannabis law and policy. And so we kind of run the curriculum and the instructors and the training for those university programs. We have a third line of business that is now the training provider for cannabis companies. And so we have a fairly large library of cannabis courses in health and safety, in compliance, in good manufacturing practices, in onboarding, in skills-based training. And so cannabis companies basically partner with us to build out a full suite of training, onboarding, compliance-based programs inside their organization. And that's really been an exciting kind of part of the business, where we're getting increasing levels of adoption and partnership with some of the larger groups. And then we have this fourth business that is called Ganjier, which is essentially a trade certification akin to a cannabis sommelier program. And so we're creating a new class of cannabis professional that really is truly a cannabis expert. They understand everything that goes into creating cannabis products and quality cannabis products. They're trained in assessment methodologies that we've developed, and then they're trained in service protocols to make sure that they are delivering the highest level of quality service and care when interacting with patients and customers. And that program just launched basically at the end of 2020.
That dovetails into my next question, which is that obviously there are many problems in the cannabis industry, but one of the ones that strikes me again and again is, broadly speaking, the lack of education among bud tenders, who are the most forward-facing people in the industry, the people with whom patients and consumers come into contact with the most basic questions. And high turnover and low pay mean that there's really not a lot of incentive for either employees or employers to educate themselves to educate bud tenders very thoroughly. How does the industry tackle that? How does your company help tackle that? What can be done?
I think that it comes from a number of sides, and it's a tricky issue, because the truth is, at a lot of the smaller retail dispensaries and retail companies, there's a lot more care than people give them credit for. Meaning the owners of those companies, they really do. They care about cannabis, and they care about their teams, and they care about their customers. And there's more care given to that ecosystem than most people realize. It's just that the headlines and the vast majority of the kind of negative talk happens at the bigger companies, which are oftentimes run by bankers or M&A professionals that are certainly trying to do their best to do a right thing, but they're having to balance that with all of the shareholders and being a public company and all that other stuff. And again, even in those circles, I think I'm seeing, from my standpoint, increasingly they're realizing that everybody's been running so fast and so hard that they're needing to now up their level of standards of how they run the company. And so I think that it's a little bit of patience. You know, the answer is a little bit of patience. I think it's creating a business case for training people better, for hiring people that are more well-trained and more skilled. And I think that it's pressure also from the industry and the customers to keep sounding the alarm about what's not working. Change doesn't always happen nearly as quickly as people want. And one of the things I've learned after being in cannabis all this time is that no matter how big or small of a company it is, everybody's running around like a chicken with their heads cut off because there's so much to do and it's so difficult and you're trying to balance growth versus sustaining and maintaining. And it's a very, very new space. And so in that, I think it just requires a little bit of patience and it requires better and better people to come forward. And this is ultimately why we're introducing what we would call standardized credentials in the industry, which are being adopted and accepted by some of these larger companies because they realize that they need to do a better job at providing more standardized training to make sure that they're delivering that service. And so I'm very aware of the negative complaints that happen, especially at some of these bigger companies, and they're sometimes warranted for sure. But the thing that makes cannabis so difficult is that each store is basically like its own startup. So for every 3 stores that people are doing a great job at, there's going to be another 1 or 2 stores where they're not because they don't have the right managers in place or they don't have the right people in place and they're just doing their best to correct those things. And so I feel like patience and consistency and creating a good business case is how everybody ultimately will kind of come to the table and be able to do things the best way that they can.
Let's hope so. You mentioned 10 universities or colleges that you have programs with. How many of those are feeding into accredited programs versus certificate programs?
Yeah, they're all certificate programs, okay. And they're all offered through the continuing education departments, which is not necessarily part of the 4-year degrees. Yeah. Which is where accreditation kind of comes from. UC Riverside was the one school that decided they just wanted to take it a step further and go through the accreditation process. And so they did, and the programs passed, and they became an accredited part of the continuing education department. Accreditation, though, is really something that often, again, plays more into undergrad or graduate degrees because that's where also Title IV funding takes place. And so in the certificate programs, which is an area of education that has over the last, particularly last 5 years, has grown exponentially in interest is because they're really kind of vocational-based training. You know, it's where the tech industry focuses most of their energy. It's where a lot of the service industry focuses a lot of their energy. And so they're not accredited in terms of undergrad or graduate programs, but all programs that go through the schools, whether they're in the continuing education department or not, go through a curriculum review board, go through the process of getting sign off from the board of directors and go through that. So it's really technically, quite frankly, it falls under the accreditation of the university, but are not given credit for undergrad or graduate degree programs.
It makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of critique about the university system and the amount of debt that people come out of those systems with. But at the same time, there's also a lot of skepticism out there right now toward for-profit educational institutions. You know, there have been a number of predatory schools in the past decade that have been shut down and highly publicized in a not great way. What's different about what you're doing? What is a certificate from Greenflower really worth in the job market? Like, how do you ensure that it has that value?
Yeah. Well, I think a big part of that comes back to the leadership behind the programs and what's really happening behind the scenes. And so I always answer that question about the validity of Greenflower programs in a number of ways. The first way is just that we really care about this industry and we really care about people being successful in this industry. And so it's something that only you will learn once you see Greenflower operate through direct experience that the programs are extremely high quality. They require substantial investment and development time to create. They are curated with not only the top experts in the space and delivered from the top experts in the space, but also backed and validated by recruiters in the space and hiring managers in the space and people that are inside the industry giving us their feedback and input. And then on top of that, we pad a lot into the programs to make them as valuable as possible, from the investment we've made in the learning technology so that people can really enjoy the process of learning and get through the programs. We have an extremely high completion rate of these programs and high satisfaction rates. We have an employer network where we partner with some of the larger companies to give our graduates first access into getting hired into these companies. We have alumni groups where we continue to broadcast opportunities, and we're always basically working within the cannabis ecosystem to make sure that people have as much access to opportunities they can. And so my first answer is, again, that we go through tremendous care to make sure that the programs are quality, the programs are valuable, the ecosystem is giving people a leg up, and we're kind of hand feeding people into the cannabis industry to get those opportunities. On top of that, because we have this division that works with the cannabis companies themselves, we also know what people are hiring for and the skills that they need and the training that they need and what those people look for. And so we are always, again, kind of coaching and mentoring people on how to be participating in this industry in a meaningful way. So that's part of it as well. And then, and I think the last part of it is that in contrast to what an analogous piece of education cost in any other industry, we're also way below market value. You know, our equivalent tech programs in other industries are $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, and ours are sub $3,000, oftentimes $2,400 for the certificates through the universities. And so we're also, quite frankly, undercharging, but that's because of where the industry's at and because this whole thing is a new developing field. So between the price itself being kind of an overwhelming value add and all these other things we do, it means something to people. And we find, again, not only are we having incredibly high completion rates of our programs, but our students are rating the programs extremely high, and many of them are going on to getting jobs or starting their own businesses and becoming success stories, which we're also then broadcasting out into the world as this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. So these things are not easy to do right. But that's the point of good leadership, is that you intend to really actually do them the right way. And over time, that reputation precedes you. And that's why we continue to get schools like Syracuse, where they talked to all the other universities in our network, and the universities themselves were singing our praises. And so that gave us, you know, the ability to get higher and higher level partnerships.
Let's finish off on the industry itself and the place that cannabis is right now, which is extremely exciting. After New York legalized last month, according to my calculations, over 40% of Americans live in adult use states. And it's no longer even remotely bold to make a prediction that federal legalization is just a matter of time. Beyond what it would mean for your company, what's the most exciting aspect of that kind of eventuality for you? And secondly, what do you think is the consequence of legalization that you think doesn't get anywhere near enough attention that people look over?
Yeah. I mean, the reason I got into cannabis is still my own personal driving motivation today, which is that I think cannabis is a game-changing wellness, health and wellness tool. I think that it has the ability to have an enormous, profoundly life-changing impact on such a huge, like almost hard to believe myriad of different issues that we face in our world. And for me personally, legalization is, and all of this is just stepping forward in terms of first the acceptance of that, but then the distribution of it. You know, my incredible mother lives in North Carolina, where it's still very illegal, and she needs cannabis for pain and for sleep. And it sucks that she doesn't have any access to it. And so for me personally, legalization and the prospect of what's coming all still just feeds into what my greater desire is for being here, which is safe access to cannabis, because I believe that has a profound positive impact in the world. And that speaks also to your second question, which is what am I excited about? I'm excited about more people getting access to quality information and quality guidance on cannabis, and then quality products on cannabis, because I just genuinely and sincerely believe that this plant has such enormous potential, and it's not even anywhere close to being actualized yet. You know, I kind of look at my world of the Chopra days, where back then it was very strange to have yoga studios out there in the world. And it's a funny thing to say today, right? But like, back then, a yoga studio was this like big deal that it existed. And now there's literally yoga studios on, you know, every corner. And so that's the same thing I see with cannabis is I'd love to live in a world where you can have access to cannabis in as convenient of ways as you have access to everything else that we accept in our world today. And that would be a great vision to manifest because I believe that that will inherently further the health and wellness and happiness of the world in which we live in.
Thank you for your time, Max.
Good to be with you. Thanks for asking very thoughtful questions.
I'm Michael Schaefer Omerman. The Cannabis Enigma podcast is a co-production of The Enigma and Americans for Safe Access. If you enjoyed the show, please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find us and, well, it makes us feel good too.